Twitter today. The first African-American woman to own a billion-dollar company.
She started the company in 1976 with just a few hundred dollars. She's now ranked by Forbes as second wealthiest self-made African-American woman in America, behind only Ms. Oprah Winfrey.
One is one of the largest staffing companies in the United States.
And also the first African-American ever named by the Star Group as one of the 50 leading women entrepreneurs in the world.
At the BET Honors Awards, and she is a true inspiration.
She spent almost 40 years helping others find work. She could fill a book with their words of wisdom.
Do you feel like the climate has changed for women, and especially for minority women?
Let's be clear, the climate has changed, but it's not sunny weather.
This journey is not one that I consider having reached success. Rather, I believe I'm on the road of success.
Amen. Amen. Building and growing corporate partnerships requires sometimes more and different skills, processes, and protocols than is needed to scale the mom and pops most of us begin at. Mayank and I want this discussion, Raju, to hit the point on how to build corporate relationships and how to thrive through tough circumstances.
I think one of the things I'm going to talk about briefly is you just gave an appropriate moment of silence for a great cause. The one thing I want to make sure that we don't lose in all of the tragedy that's happened over the last couple of years is that momentum. You see corporate America dumping millions and billions of dollars into programs to fight social justice. The unfortunate
part is social justice doesn't happen without economic justice.
Without question. Here's the flip side of that. It's going to fizz out until the next tragedy happens. And if it does, we've all failed to do it. Corporations fail for this one very reason. We do not hold our teams accountable in terms of our diversity teams and our leadership. And Larry made a great point earlier. Mm-hmm. We have people in the room that makes decisions, and they can make them like that. Mm-hmm. If we're not forcing that hand as supply diversity practitioners, then we fail. Suppliers, you're not holding us accountable. That allows us off the hook. So again, let's not waste these tragedies. Let's make their lives and their passing worth much more and keep on putting gas.
We owe that. We owe that. It's not just given to whom, but just given by who's required. You know, one of the suppliers here, just as I do, want to propel our way through the supply chain processes that can effectively as hurdles for us. And we want to stand out in procurement cycles so that we access and become viable, trusted supplier partners. We've proven from COVID that we often are faster, firmer, more formidable, and fabulous than other partners. So the corporates here have made a focused decision to embed DE&I in their culture, their business imperatives, and some overarching strategic and financial goals with the ultimate knowledge that they are positively impacting communities. For all of these corporations, DE&I is pervasive across their companies, and they want value for all parties achieved, not just posted aspirationally across websites. They want these stated values acted on, visible, and at the forefront of their mission and operations. So given the social unrest of what some say is the last few years, who may look like you and me, it's been a lifetime, okay? Most corporate initiatives for inclusion and diversity have been heightened. The need to focus on education awareness and to strategize on how to build an integrated, diverse supply chain is greater than ever. So how have the needs and efforts for supplier diversity really changed? I mean, what are your thoughts and or predictions on what is happening with this?
So, like I mentioned earlier, many, if not all, big Fortune 500 companies came out with goals, commitments. They doubled, tripled down. They started programs where there weren't any in light of this. The one thing that has not changed is the fact that everything was very, very hot and heavy around these social injustices. But the one thing that has not changed is the longevity, sustainability of making sure that we are, again, holding ourselves accountable. We cannot be in a position to say, we're having these, you know, the deaths happen, and now we're going back into our usual way of doing business. We have to evolve. And I will say this, the one thing that I've noticed over the last couple of years, because you mentioned a lot of things that Diversified are, Diversified became so resilient through the last 2.5 years. We've seen diverse suppliers come to the table where our bigger counterparts and customers and suppliers cannot come and save us, make sure that we can keep our operations going, because patients are waiting. In our industry, patients are waiting. The other thing I want to make sure we put comes across clearly is that we want our suppliers, large and small, to understand our mission of making medicines to help patients prevail. See us as a mission to heal and not just a PO. Because when we share that mission together, we make great things happen. What I'm saying is that when we get in ear words like mentorship and advocacy, we do it very basic. I have suppliers coming up and say, hey, you help me get inside that. That's not mentorship. You have wonderful, deep knowledge, rich knowledge in these corporations, not just from a procurement standpoint, but from our business leaders, business owners, budget holders. You want that free consultant dollars. You want to go into those groups and learn from them on how they can navigate. That's true mentorship. I'll give it up to they have a great mentorship program, right? And they go deep outside of procurement into the business.
And let's say also that it's had a longer life than the last 2.5 years. Because I'm talking about 16 years ago, I was in a census mentorship program.
Longevity. And they continue to evolve. And that's what it's about. You need to make sure that we are embedding supply diversity outside of procurement. We don't own the money. We may own the supply selection. We may run the
process. You've been listening in the hall. You hear those supplies say, yes. Them folks up in there, them color folks acting like they own that money.
100%. And we don't. The businesses, I can lead you to the water. But you want to go in and make sure that you're building relationships internally. And I think that's what we need to do as supply diversity practitioners, is to get out of the walls of procurement and get our suppliers to the folks that they're going to be servicing.
Say that again, Rhonda.
Get out of procurement and get into the biz. Yeah.